We've made it to podcast number 4, Against All Odds. Maybe that'll be the subtitle we use for this podcast.
Sounds like the name of our next pay-per-view.
Or the name of our 1985 confusing thriller movie starring James Woods and Jeff Bridges.
God, I have no idea what that movie's all about, but go ahead. Sorry.
Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I've kind of heard of it. I remember walking past it in the video store.
Seen it, and I have no idea what it's all about. I listened to Adam Carolla and Bill Simmons on one of their myriad podcasts of the last couple of years, and they made reference to that movie, and they talked about how, not too bad of a movie. And I was thinking, yeah, that is actually a very bad movie. It's convoluted. Alex Karras, very prominently involved. Yeah, not great. Not a great
movie.
That's
an obscure celebrity reference. I don't know who that is.
Alex Karras was the dad on Webster, also a former all-pro defensive lineman with the Detroit Lions.
Oh, sorry. He seems so jovial. He was a football player?
Yeah, he was a famous football player. He was a very good college football player at Iowa and was, as good as he was as a professional football player, arguably most famously known as one of two players who were banned from football for a year.
For what?
For gambling.
Ooh, on football?
Yeah, I think. Although, I'm not sure that was ever conclusively proven. It's been a while since I familiarized myself. It was 1963 was when they were out of football, if I remember correctly.
When you edit this, make sure that you insert the appropriate allegedlys before all of the crimes that were committed.
I only subtract in the editing process. I never add. The other player was Paul Hornung, who, of course, is a Hall of Fame running back for the Green Bay Packers.
Wait a minute. He was banned from football for a year for gambling on the sport?
Correct. Paul Hornung was out of football 1963, and was really never the same after that. He still had some semi-productive years, and the Packers were very good, but that was basically the end of his prime. He was never a top-level running back after he sat out a year.
The circle of life.
Upon returning to action in 1964, Karras refused when an official asked him to call the pregame coin toss, saying, quote, "I'm sorry, sir, I'm not permitted to gamble," end quote.
That was a funny, smart alecky comment.
It was. Okay. So, we've had a couple of interesting articles on the Axis of Ego this week. Any in particular you'd like to discuss?
Well, I think there was a lot of interesting stuff this week. I thought your magical fish article, while brief, was really interesting. And I'm mildly offended by magnetizing fish for purposes of my amusement, but I have to say it was mesmerizing to look at that YouTube video.
Yeah, and
where did you find that anyway?
I'm trying to think of where I originally saw that. It was a couple of days before I posted it. I can't remember the source, to be honest with you. It might have been, I don't think it was Drudge, but it might have been. I can't remember. But the thing that was the most, aside from the trick itself, what was most interesting about that whole thing was that, to me, was that activists were able to get this guy removed from television without having any sort of real proof. They just said, we can't think of another way that this would be possible, therefore he must be guilty of animal cruelty. So
we should probably explain what's depicted on the video for the benefit of those who haven't read that article, which I can't imagine if you're listening to this podcast.
I was just
going to
say,
haven't read the article.
How many people listen to our podcast but can't be bothered to read a 3-paragraph article on a Nagy trick?
Look, I'm a big fan of theaxisofego.com. I don't get around to reading their articles. I'm strictly a podcast fan.
I go straight to the site and I click that button on the top that says podcasts, and that's all I look at. After that, nothing. What it is, it's a Chinese magician, and he has 6 goldfish, but they're not regular goldfish. They're Chinese Asian goldfish of some kind. They don't look, it's not the kind, like if I went down to the pet store and said, I would like some goldfish, they would not look like this. These are bigger. They have bulbous eyes. It's a different species or subspecies. In any event,
it's kind of like a koi. But
yeah,
it's not
yeah,
that big.
Yeah. You're right. It looks more like that than it does what we Americans can think of as a goldfish. In any event, he's got 6 of them, and he's got them in a shallow tank of water. And at a certain, he pretends to blow this little whistle as if he's ordering them to follow his lead. And he then gets them to swim in certain patterns, almost like synchronized swimming. And when people in China, animal rights groups in China, saw this trick first performed on television, which was on Chinese New Year, they were outraged because the supposition is that the only possible way to get fish to behave in this manner would be to feed them magnets. And therefore, it is a form of animal cruelty because essentially he's dragging these fish around by their innards because they have magnetized particles of whatever food inside of them, and that's how he's controlling their movements.
That's sort of unfair. Not the magnetizing fish, but it's unfair that people just naturally assume that it's not magic.
See, that's I feel like that the burden of proof should not be on the magician to say, look, the explanation you've come up with is wrong, and now I will prove it. Because essentially, he has to destroy the value of the trick in order to prove his innocence, exonerate himself. It's like the trial and the prestige. You had a controversial, I don't know if it's controversial, but you had an interesting and I think insightful take on the whole Paul Haggis leaving the Church of Scientology news item. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Again, for the person who doesn't read anything we do and just sifts through the podcast.
Well, I'd love to talk about it. Unfortunately, a group of high-powered attorneys have already sent me letters essentially imposing a gag order over me so that I can no longer mention Scientology on the Ex Vigo podcast or on our website.
How did they track you down, considering you use an alias?
It's a very, very thin alias. So I write this article about Scientology, which I've always been really interested in. In fact, when I was in college, I wanted to be perceived as really weird. So I bought the Dianetics book and read a good 12, 14 pages of it. And then I pretty much determined that it's unreadable. I mean, it's just stereo instructions, and it's written by somebody. Obviously, I know it's written by L. Ron Howard.
That's right. It's written by L. Ron Howard wrote it.
L. Ron Hubbard, who is a science fiction writer, and has essentially concocted a fictional religion that he's now exploited and become really rich on. I mean, of course, he's dead right now, but he did become rich. So I write an article about Scientology, and in this article, I reference the New Yorker article about Paul Haggis that was mm-hmm. published a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this article was 26 pages long, an epic story, even by New Yorker standards, who publishes typically very long, extensive articles. And Lawrence Wright, the author of the article, really did a ton of research and described a lot about Scientology, a lot of which I didn't know. I mean, for example, there were a lot of incredible stories about levels of Scientology or OT levels where different, strange, and unique things happen once you get to that level. Of course, to the practitioner of Scientology, those things were all these great spiritual mysteries that are revealed to them. To the outsider who is uninitiated or otherwise semi-competent and over high school age, these things seem wildly incredible and silly. All of these things are, I guess, known to many people who have an interest in Scientology, but to me they were all new, and so I was shocked to see that people actually believe these incredible things, particularly when I learned that the old South Park episode that depicted Scientology and or the beliefs in Scientology as real sort of science fiction-y stuff, well, that's all really what they believe. I mean, if you remember from watching that episode, there was that crawl at the bottom of the screen that says, no, no, guys, this is exactly what they believe.
Right.
And for someone like me who's uninitiated, you look at that and say, wait a minute, that's not really what they believe. And I'm like, no, 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 wait, that's actually what they believe. Once you get to a certain level, OT3, the church reveals to you this crazy stuff that explains the origins of Earth. So anyway, that was all very new and very interesting to me, but what I took umbrage with my article was the reaction that a lot of people were giving about Paul Haggis. Paul Haggis, of course, is the screenwriter, the Hollywood screenwriter, who was very successful in his own right, but had been a member of that church for a long time, 30, 35 years. And during his adult life, he essentially devoted his entire life to Scientology, to the detriment of his family, I mean, losing contact with family members, actually divorcing his wife, and sending his kids to Scientology schools where they were poorly educated and were essentially illiterate until they're almost their teenage years. All these terrible things happen as a result of his devotion to Scientology in his life. And yet, what caused him to leave the church wasn't all of these terrible things. It wasn't all of these crazy concocted stories about spaceships and volcanoes. Actually, a complaint that he levied to the church leadership about its stance on gay rights, and specifically the California proposition pertaining to same-sex marriage. That's what I found absolutely fascinating about the article. It wasn't necessarily that these guys hold such crazy beliefs. It was that this guy, an important member of the Church of Scientology, felt the need to leave the church, not on the basis of all the goofiness, but on the basis of its position on same-sex marriage. So you read the article. I think you agreed with the take on it. My perspective was probably unique among most commentators who tended to focus on the more wacky aspects of the Church of Scientology.
One thing that you and I had discussed when you were telling me about the article that you were about to publish, and I think we can talk about this here, and we were talking about trying to come up with an analogy for what this move would be like in light of, as you said, all of the things that the Church of Scientology believes. To leave over not even a hard stance, not even a stance of we think gay marriage is wrong and we're going to be outspoken about it. It was just sort of a very non-committal, middling idea, and it wasn't really a strident stance in either direction. And it almost seemed like just a pretense for him to leave. And the thing we were talking about was what would be analogous to what? And the analogy we came up with that you wound up not using, because I think rightfully so, Nazi Germany analogies are overdone and overstate the case, and you decided not to do it. But the analogy we came up with was this would be like you're a captain in the SS and it's 1944 and you've been with Hitler since the beginning. And you're a captain in the SS, and he announces that, look, the war effort is going to require more of a sacrifice by our citizens in terms of money, so we're going to have to raise taxes. And you say, raise taxes? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave the Nazi party.
That's completely unrelated to the purpose for which you are associated with the Nazi party.
Exactly. And as you pointed out in the article, it would be like leaving a church because of their stance on fast food preferences.
What we were talking about earlier is that how sad is it that in Hollywood, if you're going to break with I don't want to say a cult, obviously, because for legal reasons, I would never describe the Church of Scientology as a cult.
Even though the title of your article was Fake Religion.
I draw the line at cult. fake religion, man, you can go either way. But he felt the need to grab a parachute in the gay rights movement. Like, he couldn't have condemned Scientology on its merits. He had to go gay rights. And that's what I find very troubling about not only Haggis's decision, but other people's reaction and support of Haggis's decision.
Yeah, and I think that what we talked about was, It may not, in fact, have been a career move in the sense that, yeah, he's very successful. He doesn't need a career move to increase his work because he gets work. He's one of the most famous screenwriters in Hollywood. He's one of the most successful. He doesn't need it. But I think what we talked about today off the air a few hours ago was it may have been he came to these conclusions that Church of Scientology is, in his opinion, doesn't make sense. And he really was leaving because he just felt like there was a little too much wackiness going on in the church, and he was no longer comfortable with it. And maybe it was something very basic, like, hey, I look around at my family life, and I see that it has destroyed two marriages and my relationship with my kids. Maybe I've made a mistake, and it's not too late to fix it, because I'm still alive, I can still mend these fences. And maybe that's why...
Incredible. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, maybe that's why... I mean, that would be totally logical to an outsider. That's why you decide to leave, but... He was so worried about the backlash that he had to couch his exodus in terms of, this is a stance on an issue that Hollywood elites take very seriously. And therefore, I need, as you said, a parachute. I need to be some kind of support in this community, or else I'm going to be hung out to dry, because non-Scientologists in Hollywood, if I just quit after 35 years, they're going to say, hey, you're on your own, man. You were with those guys for 35 years. We really don't care one way or the other. You're by yourself. So,
and it opens up a whole new realm of making excuses for stuff in Hollywood. So let's say you just want to get out of a movie. You can say that, well, perhaps the movie had a subtle anti-gay bias, and therefore you felt the need to completely get out, even though it was unrelated to the fact that the movie was going to bomb. So I think that you'll see other people pulling a Haggis when it comes to controversial decisions that they don't want to take personal responsibility for.
Well, that reminds me of the whole issue with the Hangover 2, or whatever it's going to be called. You know, Mel Gibson was supposed to have a cameo in it, and there was apparently a big flap, especially with Zach Galifianakis, regarding Mel Gibson's involvement in the movie. And basically Galifianakis apparently made it known that he wasn't going to participate if Mel Gibson was also participating in the movie. And they fired Mel Gibson, and I think that they replaced maybe they recast the role. I don't know what the proper terminology is, because obviously I haven't seen the script, so I don't know if that's exactly what they did or if it's a different character, but Liam Neeson is now going to be in the mix for that movie, reportedly. And then when they interviewed Galifianakis about it, he said all the right things, but it was sort of an answer, but a non-answer. He didn't completely say... What he did not say was, yeah, I had no problem with it. He basically just washed his hands of it and said, I don't make any decisions involving that stuff. I show up and act. Which isn't the same thing as saying, this had nothing to do with me. And I just think about that, where it's like, this idea... that you're in a creative endeavor, but you can use things that are unrelated to the creative endeavor to influence them. And that, to me, is, I don't know, I wouldn't go as far as to call it scary, but it's a little bit worrisome. I'm a big free speech guy. And even when people say stupid stuff, like Mel Gibson,
I know you're a big free speech guy, but Zach Galifianakis's income is dependent on the fact that people are going to go see the movie, and I wouldn't want to cast my lot with Mel Gibson if it came to my income.
But I don't think it was a financial issue. I don't think he was thinking, look, this is really going to hurt the box office. I don't want to be a part of this movie because the box office isn't going to do well if Mel Gibson's in it. I think it offended his sensibilities to allow someone like that to participate in the making of the film. So... you know what? I mean, this kind of stuff has been going on for years. It's not like this is a new thing. I mean, I just the other day watched the old episode of Saturday Night Live hosted by Andrew Dice Clay, and Nora Dunn, who was a cast member at the time, boycotted the show and didn't participate in it. Okay.
Well, I think Zach's position is completely reasonable. I mean, if I were ever cast in a movie with, say, a convicted rapist, I think I would probably turn down that role as well. Particularly if the convicted rapist was, I don't know, prone to violence and had a tattoo on his face. So I'm glad he's drawn the line, and it's commendable.
Well, it's just so funny to me that how predictable Hollywood is, whereas if you have somebody like a Mike Tyson or somebody like a Roman Polanski who is celebrated in Hollywood circles, that what they did, less onerous than making offensive comments when drunk or holding very conservative beliefs like that's literally a worse crime than rape, apparently. I mean, I'm just saying, that's, you know.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
But not to belabor the point on Scientology, and if you think we're going on too long about Scientology, I can let it go. But I think one point, perhaps a final point that should be made about Scientology is that L. Ron Hubbard, for all of his goofiness, is a brilliant businessman. Because if you read the article, you read that, well, you basically get the business behind Scientology. And you learn that all these different parishes are really franchises. I mean, they were actually called franchises at one point in the evolution of Scientology. And you have to pay a license fee to get the privilege. And when you recruit members, first off, you are paid a commission for members who you recruit, which is brilliant. Secondly, they have to come in for auditing services
right.
to achieve a certain base or clear status, which that person has to pay for. And when they do that, it's a sort of a modest initiation fee, and it's pay per service. So you go in, you get audited, which is, you know, it is what it is. I don't need to describe it, but it's a more modest fee. And then as you get clear and then you elect to go up the chain, the price gets more expensive and more expensive until you realize how much you've invested in this. And then all of these other sort of countervailing influences come in, like the church discourages you from hanging out with people who may disagree with your point of view. And the church asks you to only read those materials that are sympathetic to your point of view. And then once you get to a certain level and they start giving you the really crazy stuff like, well, you're actually here because of a spaceship and an intergalactic war, at that point, you've already invested a ton of money.
Right.
And so you're just then realizing how crazy all this mess is. And then in order to get out, you've actually got to reimburse the church, or at least they ask that you reimburse the church for a whole host of services that they say that you should have paid for before, but they're now going to back bill you for. It's really a great business model, and I highly recommend it. Well, I don't recommend it to anyone, I should say. But if you are going to start a new quacky religion, I would recommend it doing it this way.
Well, what I like about L. Ron Hubbard, and as we said last time, I mean, neither one of us dispute the fact the guy was a genius. You literally go back and read some of the quotes that he made in the I don't know what the time frame was, the 50s probably, but when he was a science fiction writer, and he's talking about the fastest way to become a millionaire in this country would be to invent a religion. I mean, he's saying this stuff openly, and it's like he says this stuff, and then there's kind of this light bulb, and dots are connected, and they stop saying it, and then a couple of years later, the Church of Scientology magically appears. I mean, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to kind of figure out what happened here.
Good for him.
I mean, it would be like if I started saying to people, you know, the First National Bank of Richmond, Virginia, I've been in this place 100 times, and I'm telling you, anybody could rob it. Anybody could rob it, get away with it, get away with 50 grand easily, no questions asked, they would never catch you. I know how to do it. I'm not a criminal, but I figured it out. I mean, I've been in there enough to just eyeball this place and figure out you have to do A, B, and C to pull this off. And then all of a sudden, like, I stop talking about it. Just completely. I talk about it all to anybody who will listen. And then I stop talking about it for a couple of months. And then the next day, you pick up a paper and the bank has been robbed and there are no leads. It's like, wouldn't you kind of think that maybe I had something to do with that?
Well, the lead would be that all of the remaining cash that wasn't stolen had pizza stains on it and grease from Papa John's.
That's ridiculous. What an outrageous claim that you just lobbed against me. I am going to get my lawyers. See, this is how it starts with the Church of Scientology. Another thing that we published this week was, of course, my weekly review of the 3 sitcoms that I watch on TV. And I think we need to get into that a little bit, because it's becoming clearer with each passing week that you and I have a bit of a difference of opinion on, I don't want to say what's funny and what's not funny, but how funny certain things are. Would you like to launch into that?
Well, when I first read your article that addressed at least 2 sitcoms that I care a lot about, which are The Office and 30 Rock, which are two shows that are appointment television for me. I really like them. I think they're two of the best shows since, I don't know, maybe Arrested Development.
Can I interrupt you real quick? I think it's funny that you refer to them as appointment television, but you don't watch them on Thursday when they air.
Look, the appointment isn't necessarily when everybody else's appointment is.
You have a different schedule.
Look, I have a fixed schedule. It just happens to be different from the rest of the American public. So, yeah, I make an appointment, and it's just a day later. In any event, I really like 30 Rock. I think I prefer 30 Rock, generally speaking, because I think Tina Fey is really smart and really funny, and I really like all the characters in that show.
I agree. We are on the same page.
Yeah. However, I feel more of an affinity to The Office than you do, and I think this week's Office was the funniest 30 minutes of sitcom comedy that I've seen in the last 4 years. And you and I differ slightly.
I don't even think it's the funniest episode they've done this year.
Well, obviously you didn't think it was the funniest episode of Thursday night.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I will say that 30 Rock and The Office, it was very close. You could easily make a case that The Office was funnier than 30 Rock on that given night. But I don't think that's the best episode of The Office. I think The Office has done better shows this year than what they did Thursday night.
Well, I think this all stems from my resentment of you, generally.
Right.
But specifically, you were reluctant to even watch The American Office for a good 2 or 3 years.
I think it was longer than that.
Really, with like 4 or 5.
Yeah, was this season 6 or season 7? I mean, it's up there.
Well, you had been an early adapter of The Office on the BBC and had got me interested in that show, which I really enjoyed and I thought was very funny, very well done, and very different from what we now know as The Office today.
Definitely different.
But you were so reluctant to watch The American Office because you thought it would be contrived and you thought it would be sort of a bad photocopy of the original. And you've changed your mind, which I like, and I think it's justified because I think the show is very good in its own right. But I didn't think you gave The Office a fair shot, and now I think you're being too tough of a grader because in the back of your mind you always know that it's not the BBC version.
Well, I have a few thoughts on that. First thing is, I think you're right to an extent. I do think that it is true that I was biased initially against the U.S. version of The Office because I enjoyed the BBC version so much. However, once I actually sat down and started watching all of the episodes of The Office, I think it's important to note that I burned through them. It's not like I watched 5 episodes and just stopped. And I had seen a couple episodes before I started. I mean, it's not like I just condemned the U.S. Office without ever seeing an episode. I had seen it. I just didn't think it was that good. And then I decided, okay, I'm gonna get through all these and just watch them. And so I did that. I think I watched 4 or 5 seasons, whatever had come out up to that point on Netflix over the period of, you know, a couple of weeks. And I think that it is a funny show. I think that it is one of the better sitcoms currently on TV. But I don't think it is as consistent as 30 Rock. And I think that when 30 Rock is at its best, it is better than The Office.
Well, you know, I think that reasonable people can disagree about what's funnier than which. But what reasonable people can't disagree on is that this week's episode of The Office, Threat Level Midnight, was substantively better by at least a full letter grade than this week's Office, or excuse me, this week's 30 Rock, which I liked. This week's Threat Level Midnight was among the best moments of network television that I've seen in a long time. And I think that it was interesting in a lot of ways because it was different. It wasn't their typical episode. It was essentially Michael Scott's film that has been alluded to throughout the last four or five seasons. And it was hilarious, consistent, and throughout the entire 30-minute show. You gave it a B plus, is that right?
Yes.
Maybe a B?
B plus.
You're a tough grader. A little unfair. And I think either you and I just didn't watch the same show, but the difference between my grade and your grade may only be like a letter grade, but it's a significant letter grade. It's like the difference between being a 1-carat diamond and a 0.99-carat diamond. This week's show was hilarious. I really liked Michael Scarn, and I really liked Golden Face. And my favorite part of the night was Creed as Cherokee Jack, who was encouraging Michael to learn how to play ice hockey by mopping the ice.
I get it. I get the episode. I just didn't think it was as funny as 30 Rock.
Well, that just means you don't like comedy.
Maybe I need to start watching this occurred to me. Maybe I need to start watching the shows in a different order because I don't watch them live. I watch them when I get home. So I could always watch Archer first and then watch 30 Rock and then watch The Office. Usually I watch The Office first.
Why did you choose Archer?
Because I like Archer.
Did people know about Archer?
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Do people know about Archer? I think so. I think comedy insiders who are familiar with H. John Benjamin's work.
I'm not an insider.
I just like to throw that out there, like as if I were some kind of insider in the world of comedy.
You get the emails that nobody else gets.
I am an insider in the world of pizza, apparently. Since all the money I stole from that hypothetical banker is stained with pizza sauce from Papa John's.
You used the proceeds to purchase a Papa John's franchise.
And convert it into a Scientology kitchen. Franchise. Mike, always a pleasure. This is going to be a significant editing job, but that's okay. I will happily do that over the course of the next, probably till about 3 o'clock this morning, but that's okay.
Well, the good thing is that the Church of Scientology will issue a temporary restraining order that will effectively shut down the Access of Ego website.
Right.
And so we probably won't have any responsibility to put up a podcast because there'll be no platform on which to place the podcast.
I'll check the website later tonight after I get back, and I will see that there'll be just a message up from WordPress saying that this website has been suspended due to a violation of the WordPress.com terms of use and service, and I will wipe my brow in relief and say, whew, don't have to edit that podcast now. Time for sleep. And then I'll just go to bed.
All right, sir.
All right.
Another great podcast, as per usual.
Another one under the belt. Good day.